60 million plus fitness records were exposed, a record-breaking botnet hits Yandex, and WhatsApp rolls out end-to-end encryption backups. All that coming up now on ThreatWire. Greetings, I am Shannon Morris and this is ThreatWire for September 14th, 2021. This is your weekly summary of the threats to our security, privacy, and internet freedom. By the way, a huge thank you to all of my new patrons this week for joining. My September live Q&A is happening on this Friday. And if you sign up this week on Patreon anytime before that starts, you can join in on the fun immediately. My Q&A is this monthly live stream that I do where we can dive deeper into security topics, we can talk about new technology, and show you what's going on behind the scenes. And that is exclusively just for patrons at any perk level. So it's one of my favorite things to do with my patrons. Patreon.com/ThreatWire as always for that. And we do have some really interesting news to get into today. So on to the first story. IoT and smart fitness wearable data was found to be stored in a vulnerable database without password protection by a team of security researchers in June. Over 60 million users were affected. On June 30th, this database was found to be completely open to the internet with no password protection in place, exposing the data of over 60 million users. The database is owned by GetHealth, which is this unified solution for health and wellness data. The company pulls health data from Fitbit, Microsoft's Band, Apple HealthKit, Strava, Google Fit, Misfit wearables, and more. The database was discovered by security researcher Jemiah Fowler and website Planet, and it includes user information such as names, date of birth, weight, height, gender, GPS logs, and location data, etc., with most of it coming from HealthKit and Fitbit. It also includes fitness information such as heart rate and sleep and speed, likely running or bicycle speed, etc. Now, the researchers found that the data was in plain text except for an encrypted ID. Even worse, this dataset includes network operations and configuration information as well. Now, the total was over 16 gigabytes. Fowler and website Planet disclosed the vulnerability to GetHealth, who quickly responded and they secured the data. Now, I did some digging and I found a GetHealth REST API that unifies data from wearable devices, and it allows users to integrate data from wearable sources as well as medical devices. Now, if this is the same company, their website, which is gethealth.io, is currently unreachable at time of recording. Collection of health data poses a serious risk to users given that it can be used for phishing or it could be resold to the highest bidder, whether that seller is a cyber criminal or the company holding that data. Health data is often not anonymous, as we have seen in this case, and there is no standard for privacy, so companies could also use this data for marketing or for advertising. This vulnerable data is a prime example of how easily millions of users could be affected with little to no recourse. A huge distributed denial of service attack has been hitting the Russian Yandex for the last several weeks, breaking records with no end in sight. According to reports, this botnet is called Miris, and it's used to flood Yandex with HTTP requests, which are also called HTTP pipelining, for websites all at the same time. In this case, the DDoS technique will request a connection to a server, but before a response is actually sent, it will send a bunch more requests. The requests originate from MikroTik gear, which was exploited with a bug in 2018 that remains unpatched on more than 56,000 MikroTik devices, even though a patch is available. Now, that vulnerability is tracked as CVE-2018-14847, and it allows for remote code execution attacks on those devices, including consumer routers. Now, again, that patch is available, but only about 30% of vulnerable devices actually have patched since 2018, so another 200,000 or so remain vulnerable to this as well. Now, hosts in this botnet had ports 2000 and port 5678 open, and they were responding to traffic. Now, by traffic volume, Krator Labs tracked 21.8 million requests per second hitting Yandex on September 5th. They also had a ton of requests between August 29th through September 5th. And Cloudflare also tracked 17.2 million requests per second happening on August 19th, both of which stemmed from Mirus. Cloudflare and Krator both believe these are small instances and the botnet could be used for much, much more. Now, the researchers recommend patching vulnerable devices that are being used in this Mirus botnet, as well as blacklisting and blocking consecutive requests in an HTTP pipeline attack. Users can also change their passwords, check firewalls to ensure that they don't allow remote access by unknown third parties, and look for scripts that weren't created by you. So far, the attacks have luckily been mitigated, but we can expect this botnet to grow by the day. Krator Labs has more technical details available on their blog. I love it when y'all send me these adorable pictures of your pets. So these are a few from my Hush Puppy Patreon Alliance members. And as usual, if you want to see your pets in a future video from ThreatWire, definitely check out my Patreon page for all of the perks listed there. And let's go ahead and get into the third news story. So WhatsApp announced on Friday that it will be rolling out an end-to-end encryption for chat backups. WhatsApp already offers end-to-end encryption by default for messages. But if a user wanted to back up their WhatsApp message history via a cloud-based service like Google Drive or iCloud, that's not encrypted. So the cloud providers or anybody with access to that cloud account could potentially access that backup file as well. WhatsApp has not had access to these backups since the user would be saving them on a third-party service. But now, WhatsApp is adding the end-to-end encryption as an option for those cloud backups. That means that the cloud service provider would not be able to access the backup either. This works with a randomly generated 64-bit encryption key, which a user can secure manually, for example, in a password manager, or they can secure it with a password. So the password version is built on a component called the hardware security module. If an owner needs to access their backup, they can do so with that manually saved encryption key, which hopefully they saved in a password manager, or with that password, which will allow them to retrieve the encryption key from the hardware security module based backup key vault. Now, the HSM, for short, vault, will render the key useless if too many attempts are made in brute forcing. WhatsApp would know a key exists, but they would not know the key itself. Now, this is purely optional, and users could find this really useful if they need to back up media or messages from WhatsApp, and they're worried about losing their current device, or they plan to switch to a new device and they want messages to carry over to the new phone. In other news, ProPublica published a piece showing how WhatsApp uses human moderators to review messages that are reported as improper, which appears to kind of be a loophole in their end-to-end encryption promises for messages. If a recipient of a message flags the message as inappropriate, then the message is copied and it's sent from the recipient's device to a WhatsApp moderator for review in plain text. Of course, this does require end-user interaction, and encryption only works if both the users are trusted. So a recipient could always take a picture of what's on their screen as well. Now that the studio is finished, I am back to filming content over at youtube.com/ShannonMorse. You can hit the subscribe button over on that channel to see my upcoming review of the new Samsung foldables. TLDR, they're pretty awesome. Don't forget to like and subscribe to this channel as well, because we are on our way to 750K. That's crazy. I'm Shannon Morse, and I'll see you on the internet. Bye.